Tomorrow, here in Lebanon, we're going to experience a total eclipse of the sun. At 11:59, the moon will begin moving in front of the sun. And an hour and a half later, at 1:28 p.m., the sun will be completely blocked out. And during this eclipse, the skies will go dark, the moon will bleed, the earth will tremble, the spirits of the dead will come to life and devour us, and the weak among us shall go mad. Or not, I don't know, we'll find out tomorrow. For those of you with an interest in astronomy, this is a once-in-a-lifetime event. Solar eclipses aren't necessarily rare, they just usually happen in other places, oftentimes out over the ocean. The last time a solar eclipse fell on U.S. soil was 1991, when an eclipse touched Hawaii. The last eclipse to touch the lower 48 was in 1979, when an eclipse hit the upper northwest corner of the country, darkening Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. Tomorrow's eclipse will traverse the continental United States, starting in Oregon and moving across to South Carolina. The path of totality, the total eclipse, will touch 14 states. The entire event will last a little over 5 hours. Everyone in the lower 48 will be able to view at least a partial eclipse, weather permitting, knock on wood. Even our friends in Canada will see part of the eclipse. The last eclipse to sweep across the entire country was 99 years ago, 1918, when the path touched Alaska and then moved to Washington State and all the way across to Florida. Tomorrow's eclipse will be unusual in that the U.S. will be the only country under the total eclipse. The eclipse will start in the Pacific Ocean and end in the Atlantic Ocean. And this is the first time in the history of our republic that we have had a singular claim to an eclipse. The U.S. will be the only country that will enjoy the total eclipse. As I said, we'll share partial eclipse with Canada. You have to go back a few years before that, 1257 to be precise, to find an eclipse that was exclusive to the lands of the United States. Here in Tennessee, the shadow cast by the moon will sweep across the ground at approximately 1,500 miles per hour. I say here in Tennessee because it'll go faster in some places and slower in others. The shadow's path will be about 70 miles wide, and Lebanon will be in that shadow. Nashville is the largest city in the path of this eclipse. And if you wish to observe the longest duration of totality, the longest that the sun will be blocked, you will want to be near Carbondale, Illinois, where the total eclipse will last 2 minutes and 41.6 seconds. In my From the Pastor this week, I included a couple of interesting links to eclipse-related items on the internet. One was my favorite. It was a video flyover of the United States, which showed the shadow moving across the country. It's like you're in a jet plane following the shadow as it just went all the way across the country, and eventually you could say, yep, there's Nashville, Lebanon, Gordonsville, and so on. And then another link I offered was an interactive map which offered precise eclipse information for any location. For example, I typed in 304 West Main, right where we're sitting, and it told me that the total eclipse will begin at 1:28 and 2 seconds and will last for 2 minutes, 34.6 seconds. And the width at this point of the width of the shadow will be 71.3 miles. The center of the path is just north of us, near Gallatin, and they will have an additional 4 seconds of totality. Downtown Nashville is further from the center, and they will experience a totality that is 40 seconds less than Lebanon. So we're doing pretty good here. The next U.S. eclipse will take place in 7 years, in 2024, and that eclipse will sweep north from Texas to Maine, grazing just sort of the northwest corner of the state of Tennessee. And it will cross tomorrow's eclipse, I believe, at Paducah, Kentucky. So they will get two total eclipses in 7 years. And I don't know anybody here, but we have one birthday tomorrow, and that's George Gephardt. He's our eclipse birthday. One of the things that makes an eclipse so tantalizing to us is that with the moon, or a baseball, running interference, we can look directly at the sun and look at and see the sun's corona, which is that ring of fire which surrounds the sun, which shoots out for millions of miles from the sun. Without the moon there, our retinas would fry like bacon in a griddle, and we would be blinded. The sun is simply too powerful for us to look at directly. Over in Bartlett, Tennessee, the American Paper Optics Company has manufactured 45 million pairs of dark glasses, including the ones I have here, for people to use during the eclipse. They were cranking out 500,000 a day this week. They will be closed on Monday. Still, even with these glasses, which are so dark and the kids could barely see anything, one still should not look at the sun for more than about 3 minutes. And I tried, and about 3 seconds was all I could last. In our reading today from the book of Exodus, we learn that God is like the sun, in that God is also something that we should not look at directly. As God tells Moses, "No one shall see me and live." As you will recall, the Hebrew people had been slaves in Egypt for 300 years. And God, with some assistance from Moses, enabled their escape to freedom. The people traveled through the wilderness towards the land that God promised them, and along the way, they camped at the base of Mount Sinai. Moses ascended that mountain in order to speak to God, and God gave Moses the law. Moses, however, was up on that mountain so long that the people down below got anxious. They felt that Moses and God had abandoned them. And so they go to Aaron and demand that Aaron fashion for them a new god as a replacement, a new god that would go before them in their journey. So Aaron created a calf made of gold. And in response to this, the people had a party, a wild party, a raucous party. In fact, to say that this was just a party is like saying that the Indy 500 is just a trip to Walmart. It's like saying that a nuclear bomb is just a firecracker. It's like saying the space shuttle is just a commuter jet. It was that wild of a party. It was a nuclear-powered Mardi Gras. As the party is in full swing, Moses descends down Mount Sinai with the two tablets from God. And when he sees the calf and he witnesses the debauchery of the people, Moses becomes so angry that he smashes the tablets on the ground. And then Moses apologizes to God. And God is indeed upset with what the people have done. And God tells Moses that while these people would eventually make it to the promised land, that God will not be traveling with them any longer. God would send an angel to accompany the people from this point on. That angel would serve as God's emissary, but God would not be with them directly. This upset Moses, and so he argues with God. He reminds God of God's promise to the people, God's covenant. He says, if we are to be the people of Yahweh, then Yahweh must be with us. And after much arguing, God relents and agrees to stay with the people. And if this weren't enough, if Moses hadn't gotten everything that he asked for, in a display of historic chutzpah, Moses continues pressing God for more. Moses has already gotten what he wanted. He's gotten God to change his plans, but now Moses asks for something additional. Moses asks God, "Show me your glory, I pray." Glory. This word glory in Hebrew means fullness or completeness. Literally, it means heaviness. Moses is not just asking to see God. Moses is asking to see God fully, completely, to see the heft of God. Moses does not want to see a partial God or a shadow of a God or a hidden God or an eclipsed God. Moses wants the unadulterated divinity before him. And so, after all that negotiating and arguing and relenting, God says to this request of Moses, "No. No one can see God's glory and live." But it's not over. God makes a deal with Moses. God says to Moses that God will indeed stay with the people, that God will go ahead of Moses and the people and proclaim the name, the Lord, to the people and to the world. God will be gracious and merciful. In other words, God says, "I will do the very thing that you have asked." And God promises that God will not be hidden, but will be conspicuous to the people and to the world. The world will know God's name. God will be gracious and merciful. God promises to be God in a manner that will be obvious to all. God will go ahead of Moses and the people and demonstrate to the world God's goodness and grace and mercy. But no one, not even Moses, can look upon God's face directly and live. If Moses wants to see God, then God tells Moses, "This is what we will do. You, Moses, need to stand on this rock, and I will pass by in my glory. But I will take you and place you in a cleft in the rock, and then I'll put my hand over you to protect you as I pass by. And as I am leaving, I will remove my hand, and you shall see my back." And because the Hebrews were a wonderfully humorous group, it really means you'll see my backside as I'm going that way. Despite Moses pleading and cajoling, he's not going to be allowed to see God's face or God's glory directly. Why? Because we humans simply are not built for that. We cannot stare at the sun. We can't breathe underwater. We can't flap our arms and fly like a bird. And we cannot look at God's face. What we can do is look at God's shadow, the evidence of where God has been. And that is enough. When we look around our world, and we see goodness and graciousness and mercy and beauty, we know that is God. That is God's reflection. And when we look around and we do see darkness, we realize God is not in that place, but God will return. Moses asked to see God's face, and God tells Moses that instead he will see God's goodness and grace and mercy. Moses only gets to see God's back because God is always in front of us. God is always moving ahead of us. God is always leading. We cannot get in front of God. God leads, God directs, God guides us through this life. Only our pride makes us think that we can get ahead of God, and our pride is wrong. Tomorrow, as you are carefully observing the eclipse, carefully please, as the moon begins to obscure the sun in the sky, I hope that you will take a moment and offer a prayer to God, a prayer that the sun will return, a prayer that we won't go mad. We won't. We won't because we know that this eclipse is part of the regular order of things. Something rare, something wonderful, and something beautiful. We know that given the mechanics of the solar system that God has set in motion, that the light, it'll return. It'll be gone only for a few moments. And then we shall see that God is there. And we shall see God's reflection around us. The story that follows this one in Scripture tells us that Moses goes back up the mountain and God gives him a copy of that law that he had smashed. And Moses comes back down the mountain and gives the tablets to the people. But what Moses doesn't realize is that because he had been with God, in the presence of God, his face is now shining. He has this radiance about him. Moses becomes a living embodiment of the reflection of God's glory. And my prayer is that we can be too. That we may embrace God's goodness. That we embrace God's presence. And so, in doing so, we become a reflection of God's presence in this world. That the world can look at us and see us shine. The light will turn off for a few moments tomorrow, and then it will return, and it will be to the glory of God. Amen.